Hi everyone, welcome to A Mobile Mentor. Jay Shetty once said, anyone can be your mentor. It's just a matter of learning from someone else's story. So with that, this is a podcast about navigating life on the move, whether it's from England to abroad, teenhood into adulthood, or personal and professional transitions, all wrapped up in the modern world of change. So take what you need, find your own way, and be happy doing it. Well, hello there. Welcome back to another episode of The Mobile Mentor. And I'm feeling particularly spicy today, mainly because of this episode's content, but also the sun is out and I'm looking out my window and I'm like, yes, please. What a great place to be, London right now, in my current headspace. So nice and rare. Anyway, I digress. Great episode for you this week. I'm actually really excited by it. I probably say this every week, but it is one that I'm very fond of, and particularly because I'm probably tooting my own horn in it. I've got some great news, but mainly because of the content, what flings have taught me this year. And I want to preface that I wouldn't usually use the word fling, but I know that's probably an easy way to describe the engagements that I am about to talk about and my experiences and what I've learned, and some quite sticky situations, but how I've reflected on them and move through them, and what I would take forward to new relationships of all kinds. I wouldn't say I go on hunts for flings, but sometimes engagements happen where they end up just becoming these short-term experiences with someone. And I guess flings feels like a dirty word, but in essence, you could say that they are. Anyway, I uncover some learnings, I uncover how I've got into sort of some hard to manage times, and what I've realised about two people's dynamics and accountability on both parts. So these can apply to short term flings going forward, they can apply to friendships, they can apply to long term relationships, they can apply to relationships of all kinds, but these have come up from these bursts, as well as talking to friends about their sort of experiences with people that kind of haven't gone into a long term thing. Secondly, do want to raise that I got featured on BBC Radio London. So on Monday the 25th of April, I aired at 8:40 p.m. on the radio, speaking to Alice Dale, the presenter and journalist. And I was so nervous, but also so excited. I was like buzzing on air. So hopefully you'll hear that. And I wasn't too wavering in my voice. But yeah, if you didn't have chance to catch me on air on Monday, I put it in this episode for you to catch up on. I want to say thank you to everyone who tuned in and supported me and sent me a message after they heard me online. Eek! It was so exciting and it made me feel really, really loved and that I'm doing something right. And lastly, I've got a really kind of profound and very top of mind and very topical knowledge bomb for you this week. And it's all about how social media is changing our consciousness and reshaping how we learn, and not for the better. Well, 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 we arrive at another section on relationships. Definitely feels like this is sort of a running theme the last few episodes. I touched on romantic relationships a few weeks ago, then platonic, and I think this one applies to both, all kind of relationships, but where it's come from for me is just really examining the types of people I'm meeting, how I respond, and what I'm learning about myself, and what I need moving forward in relationships of all kinds. And this has stemmed from, I would say, an assessment of my kind of more sort of like shorter term engagement with people in the last 6 months. You know, meeting new people and wrapping them into my life and vice versa. And these kind of newer sort of relationships that have come about since I am who I am at 31, I guess, and after moving home and going through a pandemic and like where I am now, basically, which have been, I guess, different, and I've handled them differently from me a few years ago. And I see life and I see relationships a lot more differently than I used to. And by that, I mean, I remember for the most part of like my younger years, 20s, formative years, like I wasn't a kid, but just like when I was very conscious and very adult, but like still maybe quite ignorant in my 20s, I always found the idea of relationships and especially close friendships and close relationships quite scary or intimidating, or almost like there was a fear of kind of diving into them or committing, just because in my head they signaled a loss of freedom, or they signaled this sort of like lack of ability to go off and do my own thing because I had to sort of cater to someone else's needs and expectations. And like, don't get me wrong, this wasn't a bad thing on them. I wasn't like, oh, other people are the bad thing. It was me. I was the one that was scared of giving too much, or I was the one scared because then it would kind of bond me with them into a place where maybe I couldn't kind of go off and roam and be independent. And I think independence and freedom have always been my very
core values. And I think I relate being very tied to people as the opposite of that, even though I know that's not true and they can exist together in harmony. But in my head and from my experience and upbringing and, you know, pictures of close friendships and love, I found that to be quite crippling or maybe claustrophobic or like a weight. And the reason being, because I know that if I was to fully like dive in and give everything, then there'd be this expectation, and rightly so, because reciprocity, that that would eventually want to be returned back, and someone would need me, and someone would want me to be there, and someone would want me to sort of like act how they act. And I think I was never consistent. I knew how flighty I was. I knew how there was times I was really low and I couldn't give to anyone and I could literally only give to myself. And because I was so scared of not delivering or meeting other people's expectations of what they need in the friendship or relationship, I just found it easier to avoid altogether. I couldn't get too close because I knew that like that would disappoint me and hurt my heart, the fact that I couldn't show up for that person if they were going through that, or they needed me across a consistent period and I was very inconsistent based on what I was going through. So my kind of formative years were based on kind of keeping folks at maybe arm's length, or just kind of like giving enough that I could show people I care, but then at the cost of sort of like really getting into that deep, emotionally connected, magical place, I think. And now I've realized, you know, switch up, turn up to now, I'm really trying to turn up to my friendships and close relationships and really fully give, because I think the magic happens when you're fully vulnerable and you fully give to people and then they do the same in return. It's like this bond and this like dance and this like natural integration that happens. And I think what I'm now being faced with is, how do I still retain my values, freedom, independence, still give to my friendships and my relationships, but also manage the times where I'm not able to give and I'm not able to meet other people's expectations, and what that feels like. So now I'm facing myself really in this. So this sort of section is all about me kind of raising and noting and acknowledging kind of three learnings I've learned about how to kind of manage, or how to see or how to move through new relationships, short-term engagement, new friendships, like platonic, this is kind of all in that ilk, based on sort of that background of myself. So number one, you don't always have to have every ending tie up really nicely in a cute bow or end on an agreement. Every situationship does not have to end peacefully, does not have to be intact and be wonderful and knowing that you can pick it up every time or any time in the future and run off into the sunset. I think this is probably one of my biggest learnings, because I'm someone who is such a peacekeeper and inherently a people pleaser. And I think this comes through when disagreements come up about anything, you know, like how we view the world or how a situation was, or like different conclusions of the same thing. My drive is to always sort of resolve a conflict, end in a nice way, or resolve that kind of conversation in a way where we both land on the same page and we can both sort of like be happy. This isn't reality. And I think I've just been holding this sort of like don't burn the bridge sort of notion of too high regard over the years. And I think it's actually what I've realized, it's actually drained me of like my position and my point and my stance on something. Just trying to be really peacekeeping and diplomatic, I think it's good during the negotiations and during like conversations and during communication. I think it's one of my strengths as like a communicator, like understanding different POVs and like holding space for that. But I think what I've realized is when I'm meeting or engaging with someone who is very firmly in their reality and very firmly in their belief of a situation or truth, and I'm not talking, you know, religion or anything like that, I'm talking about day-to-day occurrences that happen and conflicts, or just sort of like how you feel when you kind of end up, you know, stop spending time with someone and they have an issue or something changes, etc. I think this is where there is that space for me to actually assert what I think of something and my truth, instead of holding the other person's truth in high regard and then sort of losing myself along the way or my interaction at the cost of just keeping the peace or ending something in a nice way. I don't know if this is governed by my discomfort towards like frayed relationships, and or if it's like I've been governed by the movies where everything's always a happy ending and there's always like the niceness at the end of the ride, you just have to go through hardship. I don't know what it is, but I definitely realize like it's not serving me, and also in the interim I just lose myself, which is definitely not what I want. And like in my adult stage where I'm trying to set my boundaries, know who I am, take up the space and not like reduce myself and be small at the cost of someone else's feelings. So this is sort of like a memo to self and to anyone else who feels like this, who always feels like they're a peacekeeper or wants to like end in a nice way. It's not necessarily always the right way to do that. Sometimes you can't come to an agreement with someone. Sometimes the person who you're dealing with is firmly in their truth, and that's, you know, their right to be. But I don't think it's up to me, the one party, to kind of move around that and like shapeshift in order to accommodate that to keep the peace. This second one is sort of related to the first one. This one is two people can have two different realities of the same circumstance. So my reality of something that happened, let's say I went out for dinner with a friend and it ended in an argument. I can have a completely different reality and take on that whole event versus my friend who had another reality of that event. And this has definitely come up a lot more recently where I've had more difficult conversations about things. And in adulthood, I think you have to be a bit more real and honest, and like instead of glossing over things that come up, it's to sort of like address the elephant in the room and move past them. And I definitely sort of like align with that thinking now, so it just saves you holding onto baggage and like ill feeling for a while, which is a drain in itself. So I feel that it's okay to have your reality of the situation. But what I think people often miss, and what I've kind of come to learn in the last few years, is that the other person involved can have a completely different take, and that's also fine. We don't have to agree on the reality, and we don't have to waste our energy convincing the other of like our reality is better or true or like they're wrong. I think right and wrong is the wrong sort of like tool to bring in here, and the wrong lens to try and like end in a healthy place. What will end in a healthy place is having empathy and acknowledging that the other person's experience was different and their reality was different and their truth is different. And this is because we've all grown up in different ways, we've all been shaped by different experiences, we've all been exposed to different environments, societal expectations, cultures, you know, we've had different sort of like authority figures telling us what was right and wrong when we were younger. Like there's so much that goes into shaping who we are and what we see and how we, you know, capture and experience, that there is literally no point trying to convince the other person that their reality is wrong or yours is more right or theirs isn't the truth. Like I said, making room for someone else's experience not only shows them compassion and sort of like softens this sort of like aggression that could come up, but it also encourages that person to do the same. Again, that's like this sort of subconscious, unconscious reciprocity, oh my goodness, that comes up when you kind of extend someone empathy. They will naturally be more likely to do the same rather than kind of continue to meet you with aggression, I find. It's just showing that like human respect, and everyone wants to feel like an individual and no one wants to feel like they're being made to follow or like made to change who they are. So I think this tool, empathy and making room for different POVs of the one experience is the answer. Good thing is communication. Ask lots of questions of the other person. Just communicate clearly about your position. Be transparent. And basically that goal is just to find the clarity of two people's situation, to kind of realize those aha moments, those like, oh, okay, I understand now. Because sometimes statements or like quick analysis off the bat like can, you know, land someone in a different space. And if you're trying to understand the other person's point of view, it's like, don't want to attach to the first thing they say if it lands weirdly. The idea is to investigate and find out more so you can come to like a place of empathy and like love. And obviously the transparency and the sharing thing and asking questions comes from like the dynamic of two people. If you just met someone, then like, you know, this bit might not be relevant, and it's just sort of like you might want to cut your losses if you don't want to continue engaging with this person or building something with this person. But if there's like tenure there, and if there's love there, and if you've got an established relationship, or if you've spent like a substantial amount of time with someone, you might feel like there's that need to kind of share your story and ask the question, and you might feel comfortable enough to ask them questions about their experience and to like meet to find common ground. This is all based on like tenure, I'd say. Like I'm more likely to do this with my mum and my dad. I've been around them for years, so I'm very comfortable being completely like going in on like understanding them and asking questions and like but when if someone new I've spent, I'm like, let's say 3 weeks with or 2 weeks, then I might have a different tact. I might feel less comfortable like sharing my position and vice versa. So I think it's all about the dynamic with this kind of tool on communication and finding the clarity. The bad thing to do in this situation would be to assume you're on the same page from the off and then continue assuming that someone's reality is yours. There's just such a different scenario in different people's heads. An assumption can be a mass root of all conflicts and growing tension. So the best thing to do is communicate and find clarity. The worst thing is do not assume and keep asking questions or keep finding clarity rather than landing where you first land, because there's always, I think, more to learn, especially just on that kind of human emotive level. Not always necessarily on viewpoint, but there will be a way to meet in a heart space. And this last one might feel like a contrast to what I've just said, but it's also a useful tool, I think, for navigating sort of, let's say you're taking a step back and assessing, you know, what to do or make a decision with like a certain type of relationship or a friendship. And you've just kind of like gone to the end of the earth trying to like understand and unpick and unpack what that is. And like, if it's like been on your mind and you're trying to find out if that person's worth continuing building with or not, or if you're kind of constantly feeling rubbish in it and you're trying to find out, like, should I continue? But I actually have like so much respect and love and we have so much history together. A good tool and a good sort of like lens to approach this from is, it is what it is. So if the other one was more of like getting through these short-term kind of conversations and conflicts or engagements, this one would be you're taking a step back and you've kind of mulled it over for quite some time, marinated it, and you're like, what do I do about this person, this relationship, this dynamic? Using this it is what it is lens might help, because sometimes you don't always need to dive deeper, or you've already like dug deeper and you still land in that same space of conflict. A good way to look at it is, what is working and what isn't working? It's simple as that. Be really matter of fact with yourself. If what isn't working is stronger than what is working, then that's your answer. It is what it is. If what is working is making you feel good, and in general, like, they outweigh what isn't working, then you have your answer too. Stick at it. It's just basically looking at current state rather than going all the way back into your history with that person or projecting all the way into your future with what you think might happen based on what you know of your two personalities or characters. Especially if you've got like enough data and gut feeling already to kind of just like take a step back and be like, right now, at this present time, what is what it is and what is what it isn't.
Right, this next bit is me on the radio, so I want to give it a bit of context. So I uploaded to the show called BBC Upload, and I found it when I was browsing the BBC website on BBC Sounds. And BBC Upload is this sort of program that's all about championing creative talent, whether you're a poet, a writer, a director, a musician, a podcaster, etc., etc. And I was like, oh, and you know, no harm in applying. I'll just send my snippet of my work, my bio, and my Instagram handle, and I'm sure nothing will come of it. A day later, I got a reply from the BBC team saying, we would love to get you on next Monday. Are you free at this time? And I was like, oh my goodness, I'm going to be on the radio. And so that's how it happened. And I didn't really hear anything more except some back and forth about getting some graphics made until it came to the Monday. And I got a call from the producing team probably 2 minutes before I was due on air. So I must say, I was very much like, what am I like expecting? I don't know how I should be. I don't know what questions are coming up. So I kind of went in blind, and it was about 15 minutes long. And I guess I didn't really know until that day after speaking to the presenter that it would be around 15 minutes. But either way, it was such an exciting experience. It was so great. I loved our on-air kind of chemistry and back and forth. And I would love to do it again. It's very much inspired me to continue this intrigue into radio. So I hope you enjoy it.
Now, my next guest is just doing it all. I'm so excited. I mean, I'm 26 and I really did feel a weird shift from my teens into my 20s. You know, I started measuring my success and freaking out about where I should be in life. And I also had days where I had zero motivation. And looking back, I think that was perfectly fine and normal. But my second guest of the night had all of the similar feels navigating adulthood. And it inspired her to not only solo travel, but create a podcast on this very matter. Now, Alex Blackson calls herself the Mobile Mentor. Her podcast goes under the same name, with the first episode being recorded in Cape Town. That's really, really cool. Now, here's a tease of what she uploaded to BBC Upload. This is what came in.
And I've also go into a really quite personal share on being bisexual, things I've learned, especially in the last year, but mainly in the last few months, like what's come to head as I've been reassessing, like really important things I think people should think about, the experience of being bisexual, how sexuality is portrayed in society, how different communities receive bisexual people and people who date, not just men and men that don't just date women, and a really big story on like how I compared myself to people, but how I got out of it and how I distanced myself from doing that.
That was a clip of Alex Blackson there and her podcast, The Mobile Mentor, which she uploaded to BBC Upload. Well, this creative is also a model, as well as a podcast host, and joins me now to chat about it all. Hi, Alex.
Hi there. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited. There's so much to you. And the more I was researching, the more I was finding out. And it just, you're brilliant. I can't wait to unravel it all.
Thank you.
Let's start with the beginning. I mean, your story starts in Brighton. How long did you live there before you started travelling and ultimately coming to London?
Okay, so Brighton, I was born and raised in Brighton and then went to uni in Nottingham. And I think after the kind of whole graduating thing, I was like, now what do I want to do? So I gave London a go and then I was kind of feeling that out and I loved it. But then also I had a kind of tumultuous relationship with London and I was like, what do I want to do? Who do I want to be? And then I guess probably from my early 20s, I decided to take off and see what life had to offer beyond maybe what like was mapped out for like many of us.
I think that's the process we all have, isn't it? And you mentioned Nottingham there. Whereabouts in Notts were you for uni?
I went to Nottingham Uni of, so I was staying in Lenton for a few years.
Oh, rival uni. I was at Trent.
I must admit, they were good times.
They were. I mean, I love the Arboretum, but you did have some astonishing uni grounds. I think I watched the World Cup there. All the Euros, I'm not much of a football person. It was one of those, but we were there watching it on your campus. I snuck on. So you started in Brighton. You're born, bred Brighton. And tell me about navigating from your teens into the 20s, because I listened to, I listed some things there as I introduced you that I struggled with. What were some of the highs and lows of adulting for you, I guess?
Oh, wow. Where do I start? I feel like I'm still going through it. So I think mainly just like, who am I? I found that really hard to know. I think it was sort of like, I know who I am in the school system. I know what I know who I am when I follow these steps. And then it was like outside of that structure, like, who am I and what do I want to be? That was like the biggest thing. And I think I knew, I had some like gut feelings inside that I couldn't identify like what they were. So I needed to like kind of, I felt like I needed to break away to kind of find that out. It was very distressing, I found. And like my mental health was definitely quite like top of mind. It wasn't in a, like a healthy space. I think I was very like influenced by, I guess, what we think we should be doing and like what society expects of us. And so I was always like, that doesn't fit. So what am I going to do now? So yeah, I'd say distressing is like a big buzzword that comes out of that.
I mean, stress, it's something that we all deal with no matter what our age is, but I totally relate to coming out of teens and suddenly you're thrown into the big wide world and it's like, what do I do? Where do I go? You think you've sussed it all out. So you immersed yourself in solo traveling. That's a big thing to do. Tell me about that. It sounds so exciting.
It was exciting, but I found it like the only way that I feel like I could sort of get the clarity I needed. I found it actually more stressful or like more restricting staying put. So for me, it was like, if I book a flight one way and see what happens, then I can just do what I want to do every day. And it was sort of like a vehicle which allowed me to just be quite selfish in my decisions. So I'd wake up every day and do what I want, or, you know, I could spend my time sort of like looking after myself and there's no deadlines to meet or work to submit, etc. So for me, it was sort of a freeing sensation and allowed me just to try different things.
I love that. So you're not afraid of trying something new. And you're in London now. You came back to London. What made you decide to chill here for a bit?
I'm still chilling, yeah. I think I realised that I was probably putting a lot of pressure on London to like be what it isn't. And then when I went away, sort of like worked out a bit of what I like doing and what made me happy. And then I came back and I was like, well, I can do that anywhere really. But like London just has this sort of electric buzz and it has like, it feels like it's full of opportunity. And like loads of people I love are here and my network's here. And as a creative, it's just always great to feel connected and, you know, be inspired by what's around. So now it feels like a good fit.
I love that. And it's a real creative hub, isn't it? I've got Sam Williams. Sam Williams is a listener online and he says he's loving this. And he actually posts content online about pockets of London or places to go that he's discovered and loves sharing. So it's funny how the more we immerse ourselves in a place, we connect with people and it's great to know where it's good. Is there a particular place in London that you love?
I love Soho. I'm team Soho.
Team Soho. Yeah. I find myself in Soho quite a lot. It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing. And then second to that, Brixton, just because it just feels so like electric and like just a hub of energy. So yeah, those two.
I'm rating your choices. Now let's talk about the podcast. Explain what it's all about. I kind of gave a brief summary in the intro, but I think it needs to come from you.
I'll give it a go.
Go on,
I find it hard to articulate my own work, but I would say It's like two things. It's like a vehicle for me just to kind of express myself and kind of hold myself accountable to things I'm up to and like feeling and moving through. And it's very cathartic. So I'm like, if I just share that, it's sort of like gone to the world and I'm like, I can forget about it. But then mainly the thing is, it's just like this sort of, I guess you could say like a mental figure of someone helping you like navigate life, or people just, someone just sharing what they've been through in order to help you better like make your decisions or like understand maybe what you're going through if you didn't have like a label for it or a way to express yourself. It's like, I've heard that on that podcast. I feel like a bit more seen and validated. I'm not the only one. So I think it's all that comfort, that friendly voice, someone who's sharing what they've been through. Sure. And also for me, selfishly, like, I guess through therapy.
And well, I was going to say that you spoke there about kind of being yourself and getting into your own. The one thing I really love about your podcast is that it is just a monologue of you. You know, you put on a podcast and a lot of the time you're used to guests or people being joined by experts or other people. But actually, there's a really friendly, authentic feel about yours in particular. I listen to you talking and it's like listening to a friend voice noting me, and I'm keen and I'm hooked and I just want to know more. And was that quite daunting to kind of give yourself this, you know, obviously you've got this platform to just be you and show you that it is just you, giving people this real in-depth, this depth and insight as to who you are?
Firstly, thank you for being very kind about my podcast. It sounded really like boring at the beginning, like a monologue, because I was I think it was at first, because I definitely got comments. People were kind of DMing me and sending me WhatsApps like, oh, you shared some really like personal stuff. Are you feeling okay? And actually felt fine. It was sort of, at the beginning, it was quite worrisome. But then now I just feel like it's second nature. And I feel actually just like a sense of ease, because I know that we're all humans and going through stuff. So I'm just like, well, I'm not really ashamed or afraid of what comes back to me, because I know I'm not the only one. So actually it's sort of freeing.
Sure. And I'm sure that those listening, I mean, you speak about some really important topics there in the clip. You covered sexuality, and in your latest episode it's all about being your own worst enemy and toxic friendships. Can you give some examples of how you overcame these situations? Because I think we've all had a toxic friend. You spoke about the value of keeping something going versus cutting it off and what it can do for you in either situation. So when you felt these things, how did you overcome them? Have you got any tips for when we are feeling stressed and going through those motions?
Yeah, I feel like I'm just professing something. But from my experience, I kind of had to work out why I was feeling a certain way towards like a friendship or a dynamic, and like sit with that for a bit and work out if it was like something that I was doing or not doing, or if it was something the other person was doing. And like basically it's just about sort of clarifying what that dynamic is, or and getting to the bottom of why you think it's toxic. So if you could have a conversation with like said person you're in a friendship with, and find out maybe where they're coming from to kind of reduce that assumption in your own head of why you think it might be toxic. So I think just like clearing the way and then really understanding the other person, and then you can kind of like have that sense of compassion. But I think if that doesn't really work and you continue to feel that way, then it's sort of like working out how close you keep them. Is it like at arm's length? Is it like even further than that? Or is it just a waste of your time in general, and you know that you've got some really great other great people in your life, so why continue to hold on to that even if you've got sort of like that history with them? So I'd say it starts with communication, and then like having compassion, and then like after a while working out, is it really worth your time and energy for that relationship to continue?
Love that. And you said communication. I went for lunch with my dad earlier and we were actually talking about why sometimes things go wrong in relationships, and it is communication is such a big part of it. I'm loving this. I feel like I need you on speed dial when I'm going through something. Like you are now my personal therapist. Now look, the other thing I love about your podcast, I sorry if you felt that monologue wasn't the best way to describe it, but you know, I love the fact that you're on the move. It just makes it feel so personalized and a really one-to-one experience with the listener. At least that's how I felt. How is it to record on the move though? You know, is it easy? Have you ever been in a situation where it's been a hindrance? Go on, tell me.
I find it quite easy to record on the move, mainly because I guess my best ideas and my fresh thinking comes out. But logistically, it's like wind is not my friend, so I have to always be cautious of like where I'm turning, because if I go around a wrong bend, it's just like wind all the way, and I'm like, I've just lost that piece of content or like that recording. So it's like very, don't go out on windy days, basically. And then have it on my phone, and my phone's you know, picks up sound pretty well. So it's pretty like lo-fi in terms of production. So yeah,
I love
that. I think
that.
It's easy peasy.
Well, look, we're approaching the news. I've absolutely loved having you on. Thank you so much for uploading to BBC Upload. There's so much you're doing. I know you're modelling as well. You're such a creative. People listening, there's people listening online. Coley says that they're listening to what you've been saying. They said that I'd rather be on my own than have a toxic friend. I think, you know, that we've all... do you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree. I think, yeah, just like having a really good relationship with yourself if someone else is bringing you down is way healthier. So yes, shout out to that person.
Well, look, where can people find you?
I'm on Instagram at @a_blanks. So it's spelled BLANX. And you can search the Mobile Mental Podcast on all the platforms or wherever you listen.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on BBC Radio London and for uploading your content. I'll be keeping an eye on all that you're up to. And I'll keep listening. That's Alex there, the host of the Mobile Mental Podcast.
So this week's Knowledge Bomb is 5-star. And the reason why I love this one is because it's all about human psychology, human behaviour, and how the technological space is getting so entrenched in our society that it's changing the way we think and our brains. So this has come from the Diary of a CEO podcast with the guest Johan Hari. And they start by talking about how reading is so important. And I'm not talking just any type of reading. I'm talking physical, like medium reading. Johan Hari goes on to talk about why it's so important. He says, because the way we read screens is vastly different to how we read print mediums. How we read screens is in a very Zed-like fashion, sort of very skimming word, keyword to keyword, and like sort of going, you're sort of like missing that like information in between. In contrast to print mediums, where we are left to right, a lot slower and a lot more intentional and linear in that fashion. And so digital screen reading can change the way we are processing information and effectively absorbing and learning. He references a study whereby kids were given a book on an iPad and the same book in physical form. And after, they were asked questions about the book. And apparently, those who had iPads were 2/3 less effective at answering those questions, and they had like a much lower information intake. So all this to say, the kind of overarching message was, we need to think about the mediums in which we're consuming information, how that's shifting the way we think and how we view the world. And I'm going to play you the snippet now where he goes into the other mediums, especially social media, and how that's shifting our worldviews for the worst.
Marshall McLuhan was this kind of professor in the 60s who said this famous thing that I never understood for years. He said the medium is the message, right? And what he meant was, when a new medium comes along, he was talking about television, so a new way of telling stories and thinking about the world comes along. You know, you could turn on your television and you can watch The Wire or Wheel of Fortune or anything in between, right? The medium of television itself has a message in it, right? Irrespective of the show you're watching on the television. So the medium of television, the message is the world is very fast. It's all happening at the same time. We can all think about things you get from watching TV, the way you feel if you watch, and I love TV, things you feel when you watch TV. But I think there's a medium in the message of social media, right? So let's think about Twitter. When you open Twitter, doesn't matter if you're Donald Trump, Bernie Sanders, or I know Bubba the Love Sponge, right? There is a message you are absorbing about how the world should be. I would say the message is, firstly, the world should be interpreted and thought about very quickly, right? Quick. It should be interpreted very briefly. Anything worth saying can be said in very short little bursts.
It's binary.
And exactly. And what matters, the thing that is most important, is whether people immediately agree with this very fast, very short thing you've said, right? That is the message hidden in the medium of Twitter, right? Think about Instagram. What's the message hidden in the medium of Instagram? It's what really matters is whether you look good and whether people like how you look. Think about the message in the book, right? The printed book. What does a printed book say to you? Firstly, the world is complicated and you might want to take a good bit of time to think about one thing. Secondly, it says you should slow down. Slow down. Look at this thing that will be saying the same thing 100 years from now as it says right now, right? And thirdly, it says you might want to spend time thinking about the inner lives of other people. Because the inner lives of other people are really interesting, and you'll find that they're like you in some ways and unlike you in others, right? So I would say take care what technologies you absorb, because over time, your consciousness will come to resemble those technologies. You know, you want to have had a life of meaning and purpose where you engage with complex things, where you showed empathy, where you showed love. These are things that the current model of social media absolutely militates against, and that books help with. They're not the sole solution. There's lots of things going on, but I deeply believe in the medium of the book.
Thank you so much for listening to the Mobile Mentor podcast. If you did really enjoy yourself, please hit the subscribe button. We are available on all podcast platforms. And if you want some more nuggets of wisdom, follow us on Instagram. We're at The Mobile Mentor, all one word. If you want to send us an email with your thoughts and ideas or suggestions, we're at mobilementorpodcast@gmail.com. Cheers!